What you're about to listen to was originally broadcast on 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia. For details, go to the website 98five.com.
Research shows that 35% of internet users here in Australia have viewed pornography or visited a sex-oriented matchmaker site. That's around 4.3 million Australians. Author and acclaimed neuroscientist Dr. William Struthers is an associate professor of psychology at Wheaton University and author of the book Wired for Intimacy, How Pornography Hijacks the Male Brain. He's currently touring Australia giving audiences an insight into the harmful effects of pornography, and he's in the studio with me today. Thanks for your time.
Rodney, thanks for having me.
Well, right off from the start, what effects does it actually have on our brain?
Well, it's really interesting. As a brain scientist, one of the things that I do is I go in and I start looking about how the brain is wired together, how it's networked together. And what we find in the brain is that there's these natural pleasure pathways. So, of course, when you're hungry, you know, you have something to eat and it feels good. And you are thirsty and you get something to drink and it feels good. And it's obvious, though, that sexuality plays itself out in different ways across a person's life. So, for example, babies aren't interested in, you know, sex in the same way that a 14-year-old might be or a 24-year-old. Might be, or an 84-year-old might be. So there's these natural pathways that are pleasure pathways in the brain. And so, drugs of addiction, they go in there, they hijack the system, and that's why people become ice addicts, or they become alcoholics, or they become heroin addicts. And so it's really not surprising at all that people can develop really unhealthy attachments and addictions to things like pornography.
Because we have heard that term, addiction, used for sex addicts or porn addicts. And there has been debate over the years as to whether this is really an addiction. And you're saying it is actually setting up those pathways in the brain.
Well, I'd say it can be an addiction. It's not for everybody. And so a good example is that the addiction language is usually tied to, obviously, substance abuse. But you can even go a little bit further back. And so, for example, I have asthma. And if I want to kind of open up my airways, what I do is I take a puff on my puffer. And that medicine actually expands my windpipe, so I can actually get more air in. So that's an appropriate use of a drug. Now, any drug that is the tool that gets you the result that you want is using it. But you can also have a drug where you're using it for something that it's really not supposed to be for. So, for example, if I was to kind of use that puffer to try to get, you know, big muscular arms, that would be misusing my puffer, but it wouldn't really be damaging me. But if I went through 20, 30 puffers a day, I'd actually start doing damage to my windpipe as I was trying to kind of get big arms. So there's use, there's misuse, and there's also abuse. And so when we talk about a person who abuses a drug, it's actually doing harm to their body. It's doing harm to their relationships. It's doing harm to any number of parts of their life. What makes addiction different from abuse? I mean, not everybody who drinks is an alcoholic. I mean, some people will drink to enjoy a meal. Some people will drink to reduce stress. Some, you know, university students will binge on the weekends. And I'd say that's abuse. That's actually doing some damage to their bodies. They can find themselves in hospital because of that. But an alcoholic or a person who's addicted craves the drug. They can't control it. They do it even though there's negative consequences. And usually they've tried to stop and they just can't. So with sex, you can use it, you can misuse it, you can abuse it, and you certainly can become addicted to it. And that's why pornography gives you the opportunity to misuse and to abuse and to become addicted.
Okay, not wanting to stretch the analogy too far, but you're saying, like with your puffer, that can be used in an appropriate fashion.
Yeah.
Can we ever use pornography in an appropriate fashion?
You know, that's a great question, because there's a lot of people out there who will want to say, well, you know, pornography can be used to, spice up a married couple's life. And, you can watch some pornography. That will kind of revive the fire in your marriage if maybe the fire has gone out. And I think from that perspective, using that analogy, I don't think there is any good use for pornography, because if you understand sexuality as something that's supposed to be an intimate, sacred moment between two people, and you then record it and broadcast it, it's no longer just between those two people anymore. Or if you invade that space, then what's happened is now you're going, you're becoming a voyeur, and you're violating someone else's sacred moment. So inherently, I think pornography really corrupts, because it changes the way we have expectations about what that moment is supposed to be like. a husband and wife should be the only people who have any say in what happens in their bedroom. They don't need pornography sort of pushing itself into the bedroom. And even if you're trying to use it with good intentions, at the end of the day, it's misused. And so we develop bad expectations about what to expect from our partners.
You're saying there that sex is meant to be between just two people.
Yeah.
Is that just a moral idea that we've imposed upon it?
Well, I think you can make the argument that it's a moral idea, but I don't think anyone wants to argue that there's not a moral dimension to sex. If there's no moral dimension to sex, then we shouldn't treat sex crimes any differently than we treat regular crimes. So, you know, and not to kind of, you know, get too bombastic here, but we do see some sexual crimes as more severe, more weighty in the moral damage that's done to a person. So sex has a moral component to it. I don't think anyone wants to argue against that. But what are the moral guidelines then that we should use to tell us what's the healthy way that we should exercise our sexuality? That's where the conversation really needs to happen.
I'm talking this morning to neuroscientist Dr. William Struthers, and we're talking about pornography, the effect that it has on the brain. William, we already talked about this moral question, whether this is just a moral idea that sex is only right between two people. But you've looked at the actual science of it. You've looked at the effect that pornography has and whether it can ever actually be something healthy.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the question, because at the end of the day, you know, the society is going to have its moral standards. And as we see with the culture that's becoming more and more comfortable with pornography, what you're seeing is the standards about what's morally acceptable are slipping more and more. So, for example, it's a common thing to hear pornography referenced in a very cavalier fashion on a television show, or even as people are sort of, you know, out in the street, or to actually watch it on the airplane flight. On the way out, on their laptops or whatever. So clearly the culture is moving towards being more accepting of pornography. But as a researcher, and I look at the brain, and I look at what's going on when people view pornography, and we look at what happens to their mental health and to them physiologically when they view pornography, what we find is that the pornography is really causing them to have some significant mental health problems. So, for example, a lot of people will really struggle with depression, and they'll use the pornography to try to medicate their depression, and it just makes them more depressed. They're anxious, and so they use the pornography to get some stress release. And then what happens is then they become compulsive about using the pornography. Or they might have low self-esteem, and they go ahead and they use the pornography, and that just makes their self-esteem problems more and more. Or they use it in a way that they think they're not really doing any damage to themselves, but in reality what they're doing is they're destroying their marriage in the process. Or they're developing these habits of thinking about sexuality that really make them not good fathers, not good husbands. And so at the end of the day, there are any number of scientific pieces of evidence that suggest that it's really not helpful. It's getting in the way of actually healthy sexual development. And that's, I think, kind of something that regardless of where you stand on it as a moral issue, we can show pretty clearly there's some health problems that come about as a result of it.
And of course, that doesn't even begin to touch on what's happening at the other end of the women that are being abused and the sort of lives that they're leading.
Yeah.
And the exploitation that is happening.
Exactly. I mean, people will say, look, this is just kind of innocent fun, right? Everybody's getting paid for it. Or if it's being uploaded for free, clearly people want it to be up there. But I think we don't realize is that when we start, you know, looking at human beings as bodies to be consumed or flesh to be consumed, really what we're doing is we're creating demand for a product. And sex now has become a recreational commodity that we use. We consent. We try to find ways to financially benefit from it. And so what happens then is pornography sort of becomes the PR wing of what is essentially prostitution. I mean, in the production of a pornographic video, people are being paid to have sex. They're not having it because they want to. They may want to at one end of it, but they're doing it for the financial benefit of it. And so what happens then is it's really just the PR wing of prostitution. And prostitution means that women now are being treated as products. And so then there's one step away from human trafficking. So people say, oh, human trafficking is so different from pornography. Well, it's really two very, very simple logical steps to get you from point A to point B, because at the end of the day, you're treating people not as people, but as product.
98.5, I'm talking to Dr. William Struthers. We're talking about the effects of pornography. If there are people listening today who are caught up in pornography, in viewing pornography, and they're saying, you know, I thought it was innocent to start with, but I recognize the things you're talking about. I recognize the depression. I recognize the anxiety. but I can't break free. What do we do?
Yeah, well, that's a problem I think that we're going to be seeing more and more of in the future, because with the digital revolution and the internet, more and more young people are being exposed to pornography at an earlier age, and it's influencing the way they think about their sexuality, and they're finding themselves in these places where they really feel trapped. Now, sexuality is inherently about kind of connecting with other people, but pornography inherently isolates you. So as you're more and more isolated, that need to connect is going to be fed more and more with the pornography. Like the person who keeps eating the junk food because they're hungry, they're just going to get more and more unhealthy. So the first thing that you need to do is you need to find a way to kind of bring this to light and to be in appropriate, healthy relationships with other people who can help you. That might be by seeing a counselor or talking to your pastor or talking to someone who maybe can point you to some good resources. The organization that brought me down here, guiltypleasure.tv, I mean, that's their job, is to raise awareness of the resources that are available for people who are struggling with these kinds of problems. So there are places online that you can go to get a better understanding of it. But at the end of the day, you have to be pointed to people, because in community will be where the recovery will occur. It's not something that you can fight by yourself. You may be able to limp along, and it may not be as obvious or as severe as a person who has a heroin addiction, but emotionally and spiritually, you'll be, and psychologically, you'll be limping along, not really being very healthy.
So that website is guiltypleasure.tv. If people want to head there, they can find ways of getting help and actually looking at the problem. And obviously, a lot more of the information that we've just skimmed the surface of today will be on that site too.
Yeah. And I've been a part of this past 2 weeks coming down with Guilty Pleasure, and they've done what these call these Red Road shows. So we've been going to churches, we've been speaking at the university, we've been kind of, you know, getting as many public events as we can to just sort of raise awareness, because at the end of the day, there really is hope. You know, I mean, sometimes people think, you know, there's no hope here. I'm kind of lost. I've destroyed my family, or my husband's gone, or whatever the relationship is. There is hope that's found. You know, when you do come to the place where you realize, I'm feeding myself here in an unhealthy way. How do I learn what's the right way to feed myself? And just as the brain is plastic and can be trained into enjoying pornography, so also that plasticity enables it to kind of move out of that place of unhealthy thinking and moving you to a place of healthy thinking and healthy intimacy.
Some great hope there. 98.5, Dr. William Struthers, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Rodney, thank you for having me.
For more details on this and other programs, contact 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia, or visit the website 98five.com.